Okay, we, back to renewing the city center revitalization plan updates.
All right, thank you. Well, we're right kind of in the heart of the code part of tonight's update on the city center redevelopment plan work. And this next and final section of the code review is covering frontage types. I thought maybe I'll just reiterate that you know, what we're proposing is a new city center design review district. Marcy called it 14.30, and it would amend the municipal code engineering and construction standards manual and comprehensive plan. The base zones, again, stay the same, but what this, the additions are concerned about the building shape, size, and relationship to the streets and open spaces. So it's a little less focused on land use. It's more about the form of the redevelopment. So the frontages are really key to success. And so this illustration on the screen right now is highlighting some of that nuance, because the shop front frontage is that zero setback condition where there's ground floor retail or commercial happening. So here's a, you know, a diagram on the left illustrating that condition, and then a few photographs of it out in the real world. And that is key to the success of a ground floor retail space, that it have a strong relationship, it have things like awnings and pedestrian scale signage. The on-street parking is ideal, you know, but you can also see there's room potentially for landscape buffer and maybe the bike lane, depending on which frontage this is occurring. The forecourt illustration is trying to show that in some conditions you could jog the facade a little bit back to create some open space. And you can see those photographs of some tables and chairs where, you know, if you can imagine a restaurant or cafe that has a indoor area, but it also could have an outdoor area where some of their patrons could gather and enjoy the outdoors. The porch stoop terrace is getting more into a residential type of prototype, and sometimes the grading can, you know, means you need to elevate the ground floor a little bit with some steps or ramps. Other times I could see how that might happen at grade, and that's just a landscape setback or some combination thereof. And then Marcy's already come up with three different landscape frontage treatments, but it's just trying to highlight that when you have things like surface parking, you don't necessarily want the asphalt to run right up to the back of the sidewalk. You might want to leave a little area where a hedge or other types of landscape, it could be a low wall, it could be a low fence, or it could be 100% living plant material. So that's what these illustrations show, and they're kind of an introduction to something more detailed that would, again, regulate and be clear and objective, right? About, okay, here's a mixed-use commercial development, and specifically, what are all the dimensions and things we need to pay attention to? You know, historically, shops on the ground floor have a higher floor-to-ceiling height, and typically that's about 18 feet. And Derek, at the last meeting, we were talking about that accommodates things like ventilation for a kitchen that might be in a restaurant. It's also just kind of nice and light and airy for a retail establishment. So this is getting down into the weeds of exactly how the form of a ground floor retail with, you know, potentially different use above would be regulated. And then here's the details around that forecourt if a development wants to do that. Here's...
Jim, were you gonna, you guys were going to take... Marcy was going to take a little bit harder look at whether or not that 18-foot is absolutely what's necessary or if we might be able to drop that a little bit.
Yep. Yeah, she... That came out of the advisory committee kind of loud and clear that let's just make sure we're about to put some numbers into the code. So let's make sure they're the right numbers. And I could see how it might be like 16 to 18 or something like that for the ground floor retail. You know, I guess we should have a conversation to her. And if somebody wanted to do a slight variation, you know, what does that mean? Would you allow it or not?
Yeah, it's a, you know, this is a tough one that we've run into just to you know, we've had circumstances, we do have circumstances where a building was built as mixed use, residential over first floor commercial, but they were, you know, they initially designed for retail and then you want a restaurant wants to come in. We have this issue in Nye Beach and they didn't accommodate for that additional space you need for your ventilation systems to make a restaurant actually work. So you end up getting, you know, just maybe it becomes problematic. And then, you know, it'd be nice if we have a standard set where you have that room because you know, even though near term maybe it's general retail that they envision there, at some point somebody may want to convert to a restaurant.
A general question about all these. You said we're about to incorporate this into the code on a mechanic basis. What does that look like? Section 14.1 point something.
Yep.
Does it refer to this document or do we have to translate all this into verbiage that actually goes in sections of the code?
Want to take that?
Yeah, it's going to end up it's going to get translated into sections of the code.
Right.
Now not all of it's going to land in there. But you know, you'll probably see some of these diagrams in there. Then we're going to have an appendices, which would be for additional details or design details or something of that nature. You know, think about it similar or at least akin to the Nye Beach overlay, where you know you've got the overlay text and provisions in there, but then you have a separate set of guidelines. You know, so you might want to think of it that way. But
is that all going to be a product of this effort you guys are doing?
Marcy's working on stuff right now. Yeah.
Yeah. The team is going to come in with kind of that complete set about, well, okay, the comp plan needs to make this change. The zoning map maybe has that outline of the design district.
Yeah, and Marcy with Herbworks has the other the documents we have that this needs to be merged into, but I haven't seen her approach yet. I haven't seen a draft yet.
Fair enough.
Yeah. TBD on the more detail, but I think this is kind of the meat of what will be proposed. So,
I ask a question about the depth and where the 40 feet comes from. Mm-hmm. Retail migrating more toward micro for making it pencil, frankly, on both sides of the equation, renter and landlord. What would the process be if I came in and wanted to build out something that just accommodated micro retail, so much shallower spaces? Is that a conditional use to this? Or can we drop the depth? How important is the depth question?
It's a good point to raise to Marcy.
Yeah. I'm sure Marcy will have a good thought on that. Okay. I think she's trying to use some standard best practice numbers here, and it, you know, it's hard to cover every unique condition, but your point about, well, what if somebody came in and said, hey, could I do 30 instead of 40?
That'd be a standard variance kind of thing.
We've got variances and adjustments, you know, I mean, that's, but I do think we want to think about, do we want to use those processes or do we want to use a CUP? I mean, we have some options there, you know, depending on how we want to structure the criteria.
But even supporting like pop-up, I mean, that might be a viable build alternative where you're just building for a very small, you know, florist, something like that, that doesn't need a lot of depth. I did it at Moscone Center, of all the places that you would think, boy, retail must be big there. We incorporated three different pop-ups. It's just a 10-foot depth with plenty of power, lots of light and ventilation, and it works.
And then some shared restroom separate from
right,
that.
Yeah. Right, you do that. Yeah, exactly. So if you have that possibility for shared common area spaces.
It might get you more parking around the back.
Yeah.
So the project that Conifer did, you got that Fifth Street, one building up front, they did that small commercial. There's similar, because mm-hmm. that's pretty on micro retail, shared facilities.
So. Right.
So, you can see there's kind of a standard format to these different frontages that A, B, C, D. There's the floor to ceiling height. There's the ground floor depth minimum. There's a little bit of clarification about the separation of ground floor residential uses, building setback from the build to line. And then a little bit of a characterized by description at the bottom. And we think, you know, the combination of all those things will, again, help Derek or others, you know, manage these proposals as they come in to make sure you can kind of tick off the key things. But as you bring up how our variance is handled, I think we'll need to explore that a bit more with Marcy. Here's that forecourt, which is similar to the retail frontage. Again, it just shows how you could jog the facade to have some open space on the ground floor. And then, Bob, you pointed out we had an error. I think we had shown the minimum ground floor on the residential. You caught that number. It had said 18 feet, but it's really 9 to 10. So I just highlighted that in red. And then here's the example of the landscape frontages. She calls this landscape frontage number one, low wall and trellis, and has some additional criteria such as materials, openings, kind of the parking setback, and ground cover and planting details. And then there's landscape frontage two and landscape frontage three, low hedge. So that's kind of wraps up the direction, and this is what you'll see more of in the draft plan. But we'll stop there and take more questions or comments before we get into the final section, which is about implementation and strategy.
It seems to me that the Ninth Street visuals, and I'm trying to pick out one of those four different frontage types that match the visual, which has this not zero lot line development. Well, which one is that? And if I don't think it's really in here, maybe we need to add that.
Yeah, it's not
the Ninth
shown
Street option, if you will.
As I think you pointed out, the prior street section showed that condition,
right.
And then this 3D doesn't show it. So
right.
I think we could.
And it makes sense
that
we would want
helpful
to accommodate that, but I'm not sure it's any one of these
forecourt,
front court. I mean, none of them seem to match. So that.
Well, we certainly do not want to have sections in our code that show forms of development that are not permitted. That's going to cause us brain damage because people will see the section and say, well, why can't I do that or something akin to that?
Yep.
And then all of a sudden we're in the form-based code and we can't find a way to get there.
Right.
I think there's a way we can come up with clarity on that topic about, that one section showed the transportation-related changes within the right-of-way lines, but then it just kind of assumed existing development stayed. And now where we're moving is this 3D example goes on 9th. It's 100% residential, which doesn't cover the retail corner. So we need something to cover that. And then I don't know if we also need a third diagram of like, or if it's an existing building that just remains. Because that's another condition that we're trying. It does accommodate all those things, but we haven't illustrated all those things.
How does all this interrelate, Derek, with existing buildings and non-conforming use? What would happen if La Maison decided to free up that space or make a major change? They would have to come do a whole non-conforming use thing because they no longer fit the design criteria?
You mean if they're just looking to do modifications to an existing non... Yeah, but remember, that wouldn't go to you, though, because Senate Bill 1537 now, non-conforming use alterations are a limited land use decision. We make them fast.
Okay.
So it's an administrative decision.
It's not going to cause a lot of heartburn for the existing businesses with their flexibility on what they can do.
No, we just take them through a limited land use non-conforming review. My bigger heartburn with that Senate bill is the asphalt batch plant wants to expand. That's non-conforming too. That tends to be a little bit more of a sensitive subject with folks. And we got to handle it as an administrative decision. Salem decided to throw all non-conforming uses in the same basket.
Mr. Patrick.
Go back to the storefront. You've got something about 18 inches of vertical separation on the commercial stuff. That doesn't make any sense. Of ADA rules, and 8 means 18. And a ramp to get in there. I mean, I can see it on the residential, you can get away with it.
Yeah.
But you don't really want to require vertical separation on.
Yeah, that almost seems like the minimum should say maximum separation.
Well, it has an 18-inch minimum
and a 3-foot max. Yeah,
I think
we've got a lot of flexibility.
All right, I'm making a note.
Picture doesn't show it.
All right, so, hey Jim, so it says vertical separation distance from ground, minimum 18, max 3?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, why isn't it minimum 0?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer. I'm going to have to talk to Marcy.
Got it. Excuse me.
Okay. Any other comments before we move to the final implementation section?
One other thing on process. So architects love the notches and relief on a facade.
Mm-hmm.
But practically, we've all learned that those are hiding places. Those are places where bad things happen in the middle of the night. So does this mandate that architectural forecourt, front court thing, or is there flexibility where the developer says, you know, I just want it right along the PL. There's zero lot line, no indentations. This doesn't mandate it, does it?
There are going to be, and we're going to need to be very clear about what the fixed approval standards are. There's always a discretionary process to try to do something different, but we got to set up a set of fixed standards, and those fixed standards will require architectural relief in certain circumstances. You want to pay attention to that and make sure you're comfortable with whatever lands in the final code there. There will always be a relief valve, though, that's discretionary.
Okay.
All right. Should we move to the final section?
Sure.
All right. Well, this is just a few slides kind of summarizing some of the strategy identified in memo 7. I don't know if you've all had a chance to look at that or not, but there's kind of the high level, big picture implementing measures and timelines, and then a little bit more detail on specific steps the city can take. So I'll just dive in and start walking through that. This, you know, this is a repeat of that illustration of the court, the study area being redeveloped in the future. And there's a whole combination of things here. If you were to speak simply, you would say things like branding and wayfinding, parking management, anti-displacement, and then, you know, kind of that combination of policies, programs, projects, right? Those are all going to need to come together. So this is trying to start pointing to that on a map. You can see the Alder Festival Street, the Lee Festival Street, wayfinding towards Nye Beach, et cetera. And then there's all the transportation elements as well. Like, you've got some existing rapid flashing beacons, but in the future, where might some new ones occur, such as on the US 20 corridor? And then, of course, the couplet itself. So there's a range of improvements in that regard. There's wayfinding and its locations and different types of signage. And then Derek had mentioned that when this future couplet gets designed and built, there's going to be some opportunities for maybe closing down some existing streets that don't make sense anymore or right of way, and taking advantage of that space to, you know, use it in a new way and create an enhanced frontage, such as what is that second street there right in front of City Hall? So we're trying to, you know, illustrate.
Can you go back?
Sure.
Not that one.
Go back further? Transportation. Okay.
Yeah. Between the northern end of the couplet and Highway 20, what do you envision for bicycle traffic there? Two dedicated bicycle lanes, one on each side? Or how is that going to work? Because I don't think the right of way is enough for two bicycle lanes. Or maybe, yeah, if, you know, when it's redesigned. But you've got all that bike traffic focused right back onto 101.
Yeah, this diagram I don't think has been finalized. It early on we had shown it in this fashion, but
I'd like to see what's going to happen there, because the bike traffic, I'd hate to see that happen.
Yeah. Well, yeah, what is that by south of City Hall? Is that 10th or 11th or 9th?
Oh, you're talking about that's 10th or Benton.
Benton.
10th
okay.
Turns into Benton.
So you come up 9th as you're heading north on the bike. And right. I know we've talked about the bike facilities following Benton.
Right. And then we did. And then over to First, and I don't see the bike facilities on First here either.
Yeah, there's a kind of a, it's hard to read.
It's hard to see, but there's a dotted line there.
Yeah.
But it's hard to see.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. And that was missing on earlier versions of this diagram, so we're still kind of updating as we go. Yeah.
Yeah, that should be clarified because it's.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And that's a good question about, does it continue on 101, or are we going to rely on kind of that Benton parallel route? Because there is a parallel route. Elizabeth Street kind of heads north, right? And that's a dedicated bike route on the west of 101. And then Benton would be kind of east of 101 as a parallel bike route.
Well, yeah, you've got, well, you've got the Oregon Coast bike route, which is Elizabeth, and then it ties up, goes up coast, and then eventually we'll get onto Ocean View.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you have that.
Yeah. So it's kind of trying to illustrate the complete network here. And your point about, does that mean we keep it on 101 as we head south? And I'm not sure we've answered that question clearly
yet. You need to take a look at that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So back to, it was a earlier memo. I just wanted to kind of pop out some of the ideas that had been proposed, some of like the couplet as it comes in front of City Hall. You can see the farmer's market stays where it is, but the illustration shows that there's like permanent canopies over the parking that could double duty for shelter for during the week cars parked, and then on Saturday for the farmer's market booths. And there's a photo in the bottom corner of like an example of that kind of covered parking. Back to the bus transit facilities could be moved slightly north if you closed off the Second Street connection, and that whole frontage could be then enhanced with like a new bus facility, pickup, drop off, as well as a variety of landscape treatments.
Isn't that problematic for traffic getting to City Hall and 60 plus in particular, which is that yellow sort of blob there in the empty white space?
You know, I haven't really seen
not term. Labeled yeah. here at all. But, it, you know, you've got on your item number 9, potential closure at a plaza there. Number 1 is closed Second. So then from Highway 101, there's really no way to get to the 60 plus center without going a long way around.
Well, you bring up good points. This is kind of a sketch of what we're seeing some opportunities.
I mean, that it's fine to discuss it, but it is important that you have to be able to get in there, especially old folks. You know how they drive.
Well, we absolutely want to make sure all of the city facilities are available. One thing I've observed is that segment that they're showing as closing for Southwest Second is not used as heavily as other access points to City Hall because it's an awkward access on a 101. And we don't have a lot of parking over there for people to access City Hall. Most people come in.
But emergency police access, that's absolutely far and away the way they get to 101 now. I don't know whether...
Right. Any redesign over here would have to accommodate police needs and all that other stuff. But, I mean, the gist of it is you'd be able to move that bus stop to the north and design it in a way that it functions better than it does right now.
Yeah. Good idea.
Now, you mentioned the farmer's market. Will traffic either northbound or southbound be delayed with the market in place, you know, the traffic, people going across the streets, et cetera? I mean, I appreciate the market's like the third rail of local, the third rail of local politics. If you say anything about it, you get chastised severely.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're trying to increase the flow of traffic, especially southbound in the summer.
Yeah, that's a great question. Right now, where I think we are in our understanding is that the couplet and it's how it separates the flow of traffic, generally it reduces the number of vehicle pedestrian conflicts. So in some ways it creates kind of more efficient flow of both and should make the crossings of both 9th and 101 safer for pedestrians in particular. Do we have like some high level of detail on that specific question? I don't think we do yet, but I think it would function in many ways similar to how it does today, where sure, on the weekend, if it's a lot of folks crossing, well then the signals and things that are in place.
Because there won't be parking on the northbound side because there's no parking.
There won't be parking on the northbound couplet. There will be potentially some additional parking if on Lee and Alder and even Herbert with the angled parking. And then
in the new lot, you've indicated number four here.
Yes.
That's a brand new bunch of parking.
Yeah.
To replace the parking that's going away.
That gets lost. Yeah.
I don't know if it's struck down by the voters, but, you know, maybe move the market to the Lincoln County Commons might be a discussion, but I don't think it'll happen in my lifetime.
All right. Well, this drawing is just kind of, again, what are we talking about? There's a lot of things we're talking about, and this is a kind of one version of integrating the couplet and making all those other changes that, you know, may be necessary to get a, you know, comprehensive result. Also responding to the comments about parks and open space, like, hey, we want more if this is going to intensify. And so I think around City Hall, there's some opportunity. And then also, for example, like you have the small Founding Rock Park, that's potentially an opportunity where if you were able to, I'm not sure if acquisition would be required or not, but you might be able to expand that park and provide some additional open space in the city center.
And that's state property. We desperately need to get some more green space. We got so much hardscape in the commercial core. We were talking about it today as a staff trying to figure out, I mean, if you're going to do any kind of activation near term while we're working on some of these longer term solutions, what kind of gathering spaces do we have? And it's almost all exclusively hardscape. Well, we have very little in the way of park space, and certainly not park space that's much in the way of usable. So it's going to be a challenge. That might be a great location. We could work something out with the state.
Yeah.
But we certainly want to keep an eye towards where can we add in some green space with this redevelopment.
Yeah, these aren't like a final design necessarily, and there could be other lots that you target to acquire for an open space, but we just wanted to make sure we had some drawings saying, you know, yeah, we're paying attention to it, and it could, you know, there is opportunity to develop it.
Did you do a blow up of the farmer's market like this, where you have keynotes? I think that would be helpful. I'm guessing the council might want to see that too.
It's
helps it beyond just the overall visual. I think these keynotes with a exploded view are helpful to understand the changes you're making and the changes that you're not making too. You can point out parking and access from parking and pedestrian paths, because I'm not sure that's terribly clear to me either, to Braulio's point.
Once you
park, how do you get there? What do I have to hop over as a Frogger?
There's a lot of communities that are moving their farmers markets like to the fairgrounds, where there's parking, it's safer, and you don't affect traffic. It's neither here nor there, but communities are doing that.
I think there's an opportunity here, and there will continue to be an opportunity for a bit for the city to work with farmers market on whether or not an alternative location makes sense. The discussions I've heard of late have more to do with like the Performing Arts Center lot, which is fairly large. It already has covered parking. I'm not sure about the fairgrounds. It gets tied up in the whole commons conversation. In the commons project is kind of a hard first to pin down when the county is going to actually move on that. Yeah, but you know, part of it's just getting the farmers market folks and, you know, to be comfortable that they don't need the highway exposure, that the people that are coming because they want to go to the farmers market, not because they happen to drive by and say, hey, there's a farmers market, maybe I ought to stop and attend.
It's going to require some data collection.
I think we've tried to be careful here that, you know, this, we don't have to displace the farmers market from where it's at. It could stay there for a considerable amount of time. And a decision down the road would need to be made. Do we want to commit to the covered parking? Because that's going to cost a bit of money.
Yeah.
I think here at the city, we try to keep in mind, too, that parking lot where they were there on this was, that's a temporary solution on that property. That property wasn't purchased for a parking lot. It was purchased for future expansion of the City Hall campus, which could include, a joint fire police type facility, given that our police department's been in, you know, kind of constrained quarters here. Those things are down the road, and we felt we needed to make productive use of the property near term, and that's why it's a parking lot, and it's evolved from there. So,
Mr. Patrick.
I have a couple of slides to where you're at the transfer. That one and the one before it. You've got a road that goes off of John Moore on the northeast first. It does.
John Moore on the northeast first.
First light on Highway 20 coming into town.
Is that shown in the wrong location? This Moore right here?
Yeah, the far right is Moore. That first traffic light is John Moore Road.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a connection from Highway 20 on the northeast.
Right there.
Yeah.
That's going to be a bike path connection.
Okay, because it shows as a road in the picture. So.
No, it should not be a road. That's going to be a multi-use path.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I think there should just be...
There's a big gully there, isn't there?
We have the room on the city property. Because we're working with Road and Driveway to acquire some right-of-way off their property to get that Safe Routes project in, we just had Century West kind of work out, you know, what that looks like, and we had them put in the 10-foot multi-use path. We've got the room before we hit the steep part of the gully to get that in over to first.
Hmm. Good.
So that'll be after we get the Safe Routes project done, we'd like to get the multi-use path connection over to first.
By the way, if you're just making, as long as we're on this slide, the EADS blinking rapid flashing is existing. It's not potential.
That's come up before.
Hmm?
Yeah, that's come up before too. We got to get that. We should fix that.
EADS is existing.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, it started off as proposed, but got completed in the course of the project.
Okay. All right. Well, that's an easy fix. All right.
Got a pen? No. Do you have a pen? I've got one, but it's erased.
I gotta get back to the hospital.
Okay, we're grabbing you.
Yeah, I know. I've my office was in my.
She's gonna grab you a pen. Unfortunately, I got one with you. Oh wait,
I really do.
She's gonna get one. This is a racing law. I can't use it.
Oh.
Okay. What are we doing here?
Just a brief break. Bill's got to sign the final order. He's got to leave.
Oh. Okay.
We got it, Sherry. Thanks, Bill.
See ya.
Okey-dokey.
I'll check on these.
Right. My man's down in the hospital.
Serious?
No, she's not admitted. No.
All right, I think we're heading into the home stretch.
Ah.
And
I've got a meeting to get to at 8.
Yeah, well, we still have a quorum.
Next time. Part of our team is focused on implementation, and Eco Northwest is kind of leading that charge. But, you know, there's a whole range of things that the city needs to be focused on in addition to the development code update. So they've started to organize those actions and identify roles and responsibilities. And so this slide is a little summary from memo 7. What are the near-term priorities? So, you know, they've got 6 major categories: housing, development, and site readiness. They've got farmers market and public spaces, code and parking, business support and activation, public realm and identity, and then working with ODOT because they're, you know, a major stakeholder who, the good news is, may be able to provide a lot of funding to help change the transportation features in this area. So We can kind of go into these bullet points if you like, but that's kind of the big picture stuff. And then they have sort of longer term, what are the actions related to those major six categories? So
I would only, we don't need to dive through the details, but I would share with the commission that these are not all bullet items that I'm doing or our office is doing. We've got a half a dozen individuals in City Hall that will be taking leads on various components of this that are going to be running in parallel. We actually had a meeting today. We have a separate action plan that borrows from this but begins to flesh out, you know, over the next year or two, who's taking lead on what, you know, be it the grant, you know, and the facade improvement component, or, you know, the short-term activation and beautification piece, the wayfinding component, the initiating 30% design on the transportation solution. We got about 9 different items we've identified, and we're kind of divvying that up to make sure it's adequately resourced on the city side.
Okay. Oh, by the way, how much money is in the Northside URA now?
Well, the Northside URA will generate $40 million by the end of the 2030s. We've expended or obligated about $5 million of that up to this point.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, if you don't want to dive into the weeds on the priorities, there is the adoption schedule ahead if you want to review that, Derek.
Yeah, I'll be very brief. We've already touched on this. Is you know, we're going to take this feedback. I'm going to ask Jim to make a few changes to this PowerPoint he's presenting to the council to pick up some of the feedback you provided tonight. And then council's going to have a work session on the 2nd of June. Then the consultants will deliver a final draft of the plan. That's going to be brought back to you on the 23rd of June on a follow-up work session for you to take a look at. If you're comfortable at that point that it's fairly substantially complete, that would be the point in time you would initiate the legislative process so we could do a 35-day notice to DLCD. We'd then be looking at a hearing before the Planning Commission late July, council in August. Assume we have a little flex there depending on how things play out. Probably looking at adoption early September. We may, based on how things go, want to just adopt the comp plan policies and implementation measures first and take a little bit more time on the form-based code. We have that flexibility. The TGM grant, which paid for about half of this project, which came from the state, that's really focused on making sure that the policy component and the implementation measures, so the guidance or direction for next steps, gets adopted into our comprehensive plan. They obviously can't require that, but that's what they're hoping to see by the end of this. They recognize the form-based code components might take a little bit longer. So that's where we're at.
And so if they do take longer and you need consultancy support, you have local funds that were used to match this grant that are available to pay for that?
Those local funds were the match of this.
No more state money, so
correct.
Can't pay a bill.
Well, let's see where we're at.
Okay.
I mean, it's not like we don't have resources that we could bring to bear if there's some additional targeted work that needs to be done. We can do that. We have a few different sources that we can draw from, but again, it gets at scope of the effort. You know, we're certainly not in a position. This TGM project was a $500,000 project, a little more than that. We're not in a position to be in that kind of arena. But, you know, if we've got some targeted work, you know, and it's in the $10,000 to $15,000 range, that's not a problem.
I did have, Jim, within memo, God, that type is small. I think it's either 9 or 7. The code amendments and comp plan stuff. On page 27 of that memo.
Marcy's document, it's 9. It's the one with all the frontage, the graphics and whatnot. Is that the document you're talking about?
Looks like this.
Well, I could go back to page one, but it's got some code sections. 14.30, city center design review district general standards. Actually, it gets into some code here, I think.
Uh-huh. Oh, you want one that has draft right over the table?
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Got it. Okay, page 75 overall. Okay.
Yes, big page 75, but on page 27.
27 of the document.
That needs, yeah, I think it that looks needs like to be that. Fixed.
Got yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, the 18 wasn't changed to 8 to 10 on page 40, big page 88.
Correct. We didn't amend this. We just amended the slideshow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And same on the land uses table on page 49.
Okay.
And a lot of this stuff can come right out of our existing municipal code. It just hasn't been done yet.
Okay. Yep, we're not there yet.
But we're getting there.
This one, yeah,
we're it's progress.
I think overall it's tremendous product ultimately. And if we're able to, over the next 20 years, well, I'm not going to be around to see it, but over the next 20 years, it could make a dramatic difference in downtown.
Yeah.
Well, to your point earlier, and it's a fair and an important question, Bob, is you know, what kind of resources do we have to bring to the table? And we've got a healthy amount still in that Northside district,
right,
and a lot of it's going to be dedicated to this area. That's going to really help us. That initiating 30% design is going to be key, because we can kind of bridge that from concept to get it to kind of real cost estimates and have a real alignment. And that's going to be what we need to be able to line up the state and federal dollars that we're going to need to match in with urban renewal. So I think we have a real shot to make meaningful change in city center this go around. I think the prior attempts in the past, while very good and well-meaning attempts, they never had money behind it. The Peninsula Plan never had anything that was invested behind it, and so it never came to fruition. I mean, this stuff always takes money. So,
got one more.
All
I
right.
I can't resist. this is on memo number 7.
All right.
In the very second page.
Okay.
There's a greater than sign that should be less than sign.
Got it. At the top?
At the top in the orange bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't follow it through. That may occur. Same error may occur other places.
That's the very first one should be less than, not greater than 100,000.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. I got that.
One thing I'll say about the playbook, Derek.
Yeah.
The reference to a BID. So I get why that's going to be downstream, but it might not be as downstream as we're suggesting. It my experience in Tucson with a moribund downtown, it was actually catalyzed through a BID that then led to other things, and then a voter initiative, and then it was actually the foundation upon which we did downtown development, which is unusual, but it worked. So I'm just noting there are multiple paths possible in terms of when that business synergy takes place and gets a name and has a leader and moves.
Oh, this is an excellent point, John. You know, we spent some time talking about this today. One of the concerns about branding, for example, you know, they took a run at that previously. Obviously, we got a deco brand, and you see how effective that is. You know, it didn't stick. It didn't have champions. We used to have a city center business association. They don't exist anymore. So part of it from we were talking was, you know, we needed to see what kind of, whether or not, it, you know, there's a willingness from the business owners to come together and begin to work and collaborate again, knowing that some of these changes are coming down and they have the opportunity to influence them with, you know, with the funding behind it, as we're talking about, because that's important. Whether or not it becomes a formal business improvement district or not,
right,
to have the champions
short of that, yeah,
is going to be so important, and it's certainly going to be important for any kind of branding to stick. So,
good work. I echo my colleague's statement.
Thank you. On behalf of the entire team.
Well, thank you very much. And unless anybody has anything else, we're adjourned.
Thank you.